the dead and the living at the time of Christ's return. We're studying this morning from the book of 1 Thessalonians, the fourth chapter, beginning at verse 13 and continuing to the end of chapter 4. There's always been confusion about the second coming of Christ. We think that we have confused ourselves in this age in which we live, but this letter contains a corrective note in the sense that the Thessalonians were very much confused about the second coming of Christ. There were some teachers within the congregation, or people who had come among the congregation attempting to teach, who were teaching that the Lord had come and that the resurrection was past, and that these who were now living would not be living when Christ came again in the sense of what we know as the rapture. So there was confusion. And in these verses in chapter 4, and as we look at chapter 5, the first several verses next Sunday, this is Paul's attempt at giving them an understanding of the order of things that would occur when Jesus comes again. But you'll see or realize as we study these scriptures that there is no date setting here. But there are some benchmarks by which we may gauge the culture, the times, the circumstances that surround us, so that as Paul writes in the fifth chapter, we will not be children of darkness. We will be children of light. And of the times and the seasons, we will not be ignorant. So let's look at these verses this morning with the idea that Paul is teaching this congregation about the second coming of Christ. And he mentions first those that are dead, and then he mentions second those that are living. Verse 13, "But I would not have you be ignorant, brethren, concerning them which are asleep, that you sorrow not, even as others which have no hope." Ignorance is not a sin, but it may cause us to sin. Therefore, Paul wants these people to not be agnostics when they are called upon to give a message or to speak and teach about the second coming of Jesus Christ. Paul realized that in their ignorance, they were going to make mistakes. They were going to get confused. And confusion would cause arguments. And arguments would cause dissension. And so he wants them to be fully aware of those events that will occur when Jesus comes again. That's very important. And the word sleep, of course, is euphemistic for being dead. It's used by Jesus a number of times in the Gospels. And the reason that they used the word sleep, and in the early days of the Christian church, when they spoke of their burial places, they used the word dormitory. Dormitory. That is a place where people live and where they sleep. They took away the sting of death by giving reference to the fact that people are alive in the sense of spiritual life, that the body has been put into the ground, but it's just chemicals. It's just stuff. And it will decay and it will disintegrate. But one day when Jesus Christ comes again, he will call it all together. He will speak again to the dead as God spoke and the worlds were framed by his word. So if God can speak and form and frame the worlds and the system around it, then we have no doubt that he can speak and have a person's body resurrected from the grave. This misunderstanding that they had concerning the return of Christ had created a feeling of grief. That's the word that Paul uses, that you sorrow not. That is, because you have not had sufficient training or education, or you've forgotten what I taught you when I was there, or you've been misled by others coming and teaching you, it has caused you to be over grievous concerning the death of your loved ones or your friends. We are not to sorrow as people who have no hope. And there's a reason for that inclusion of the phrase no hope. The idea of existing after death was not new, but it was rare. But the idea of a bodily resurrection had not been taught. The Egyptians had embalmed bodies, hoping that the spirit could come again someday and re-inhabit that embalmed body. But that was as close as any religion had ever come to teaching life after death with a body that was not resurrected, but a body that was just simply inhabited again. But Jesus Christ gave to us by his resurrection the assurance that we will be bodily, physically resurrected. And you remember that after Jesus was resurrected, people knew him, and he walked with them, and he talked with them, and he taught them, and he ate fish. So he was, in every sense of the word, reconstituted. He was resurrected. He came forth, not half of what he was, not a part of his being, but in the wholeness of himself. And in their ignorance, these people were grieving because they had not fully understood the glorious hope we have of being resurrected from the grave, and the joy and the reassurance that it can give to us concerning our loved ones and concerning ourselves. Now, for if we believe, that is the key. For if we believe, then we have all of these assurances. But if we believe not, as Jesus taught, then are we condemned. Jesus did not come to condemn the world, but to save the world. And if we will believe in Jesus Christ and what he did for us when he died on the cross, and that he was buried and rose again, that is the kernel, that is the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And if when we heard the gospel, we believed it and we trusted in it and committed our being and our future and our resurrection and our righteousness with God, if we committed ourselves to God and believed it and trusted the gospel, if we believe. Now, let me assure you that this belief is between you and God. We don't believe that having faith in a denomination will save you. We don't believe that being a good person will save you. We don't believe that doing many good works will save you. The power that you will have within you, the born-again experience of your spiritual nature, will give you the character and nature of God so that you can be resurrected if you die, or be caught up together with those who are resurrected at the coming of Jesus Christ. For if we believe what? What is it we must believe? That Jesus died and rose again, even so also them which sleep in Jesus will God bring with him. For this we say unto you, not by intuition, not to instill false hope, not simply to give you moments of peace or hours of comfort, but we give you this information by the word of the Lord. And that's important. The only thing we can trust in religious matters is not what I say, or what someone else says, not a doctrinal statement. What we can believe and trust and know for sure will come to pass is what is taught by the word of the Lord. And Paul wants these people to be assured that what he's teaching them is a direct result of his being taught by Jesus Christ. And here's the order. That we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Lord shall not go before them which are asleep. That is, the resurrection will not be after the rapture of the saints, but the rapture of the saints will be after the resurrection. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven. And you notice that there is an emphasis on autos, on himself. He himself, the Lord himself, Jesus Christ, shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangels, and with the trump of God, the noisiest morning or hour when all of the universe, perhaps, when this shout, when this voice, and when this trump shall sound, it will resonate from one end of the earth to the other. And all those who have died believing in Jesus Christ will be resurrected from the dead. The dead in Christ shall rise first. That's the first thing that will happen when Jesus Christ comes back to the earth. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds. That is, we will not welcome Christ back to the earth. This is not when the feet of Jesus touch the mountain in Jerusalem and it splits in two according to prophecies of the Old Testament. But we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. That is, there is no separation. We are forever, then and forever, with the Lord. Now, Paul says, wherefore comfort one another with these words. Encourage one another. Let this be the stability. Let this give you the stability that you need to face life in regard to death, whether it's yours or someone else's. In regard to, will we live again? Absolutely. Will we forever be with Christ, never to be separated again? Absolutely. Well, what's going to happen? Well, I think that there'll be a period of time when God will pour out wrath upon this earth, but we will be with Jesus. And in that period of time, there will occur what's referred to as the judgment seat of Christ, when all of us will be judged not as to our salvation, but as to our faithfulness to him while we were on this earth. The parables speak of those who are commended. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. The parables speak of those who were not faithful. They do not and are not condemned to hell, but they may miss some rewards that they would be happy and proud to receive. Because after the judgment seat of Christ, then he's coming in the clouds with 10,000s of his saints, according to the little book of Jude. And when he comes with all of his saints, the resurrected saints from Adam and Eve, Abraham, Jacob, David, all of the believers, he'll come back with them, and he will come back with those whom he has raptured, who were living, and with them, with him, he will then establish his kingdom on this earth. And when he establishes his kingdom on this earth, it will be the kingdom that he came to establish hundreds of years earlier. But the Jewish nation refused to receive him as their king. And therefore, the Gentile age of being the group through whom God taught other nations was instituted. And the church was instituted as that institution of teaching and representing God on earth. When Jesus comes, this great resurrection occurs, this great change of all the living occurs, this metamorphosis of those who live from this earth, on this earth, when that occurs and he comes back, then the kingdom will be established. Now, what are the signs of his coming? Well, there are three of the Gospels that give explicit signs concerning his coming. And I preached on these at three different Sundays several weeks ago, perhaps months, because I was trying to bring you to this point where we are today. That is, where are we now in this time frame of God? Well, what Paul wrote here is that time frame that we are living in now. We are not being resurrected. We are not being raptured, but we are dying and we're being buried and we're experiencing sadness. But this is just how things must occur in order for the sovereign God to totally complete everything that he has designed for himself. And when all of that, as the scriptures describe it, the fullness of time shall come, then he will come again. That's how he came the first time, in the fullness of time. It'll not be a minute early. It'll not be a minute late. This is all in the plan of God. No human beings, no catastrophe on earth, no war in heaven can delay or set aside this time frame that God has set for his son, not to come back and be treated as he was, not to come back and be crucified again, not to come back and to wear a crown of thorns, but to come back and to truly be King of kings and Lord of lords. And the crown he wears will be the crown he should have worn thousands of years ago. And we will live with Christ on this earth, and he will be our king and our judge. And it'll be a time such as men have never known. It will fulfill in totality that purpose for which man was created. That is, men will be on earth. It'll be a time of fruitfulness, a time of peace, a time of governing, a time of teaching. But it'll end when Satan rebels. Again, when he's loosed for a little season, it will end, and then that's when the earth as we know it will be melted with fervent heat. Now, all these things are taught in the Bible. I've just referred to them to bring you to where I want us to get to understanding what we can have peace and comfort and not be destabilized by the cultural changes and all of the other things that are occurring now that bring concern and perhaps worry. But if we know the end from the beginning, and if we believe that Jesus died for our sins and rose again, our concerns can be minimal. we can find some peace and comfort and joy in life, that if we had no hope, we would indeed be right in grieving. If you're here this morning and you have never believed into Jesus Christ, I beg you, I plead with you this morning to place your faith and trust in Jesus Christ. If you have already believed in Him and you have established a righteous relationship in Him, with Him and in Him because you've trusted into Him, but you've never been immersed, to show your faith and confidence in His death, burial, and resurrection by presenting such a picture by baptism, I invite you to come this morning for baptism, or if you need to come and to move your letter to our congregation and serve with us, would you do that while we stand and while we sing?
Just as I am without one plea, but that Thy blood was shed for me, and that Thou bidst me
of